Welcome to UFO Think Tank Radio with your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, my friend. Hello, my friend. Hello, it is Alejandro. It's wonderful to be speaking with you all again. It's been a couple weeks. I was not here last weekend. You are aware of that because there was no show. And you probably thought that your new iPhone 5 was broken because all the podcasts weren't downloading. But that's not the case. It was I. But it wasn't out of evilness that I was not here last week. In fact, it was a good thing for me and for you, because I was actually, among other things, I was in Vegas last weekend, my friends. Yes, this is where I was. And I was there to cover that special panel of UFO peeps. So we're going to talk about that, and possibly you've seen the stories on the Huffington Post and in the Las Vegas Sun, I think it's called. And they posted my pictures because I took the pictures and of these guys. So that's cool, huh? Yeah, score for me. So I'm happy about that. And we'll talk about the story and about that event a little later on in the show during the news section. However, I want to tell you about tonight's guest. Tonight's guest is John Ventry. He is the Pennsylvania State MUFON director. So he's a busy guy out there in Pennsylvania. And he has just retired. And he isn't just like, you know, sitting on the couch watching Judge Judy for his retirement. He is actually out moving and shaking, writing books, running conferences, all kinds of stuff. And in particular, we're going to talk to him about the conferences he's got going on. In fact, there's a weird echo going on. I don't know if you can hear that or not. Hopefully not. Hopefully it sounds good for you. But in fact, he just ran a conference that just ended last night. And I interviewed him Thursday, the day before this conference in Philadelphia that he just did this past weekend, just yesterday. And he's got one going on this weekend as well. No, not this weekend, in a couple weekends from now, 12th through the 13th, I'm pretty sure it is, in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is what they call it out there. I know I worked with some of those Pittsburghians, and they have some weird things that they say and do out there. But regardless of how weird Pennsylvanians are, they're really cool because they go to these conferences that John puts on, and we'll be talking about those conferences and why he started them, because he actually started them because, and this all rolls into the book and everything, he started them because of a big sighting a few years ago that happened over a mall, started over a mall, a mass sighting. So we'll talk about that. That inspired an episode of UFOs Over Earth. If you remember, I used to talk about that because that was the MUFON television show that I got to be somewhat involved with. That was a few years ago. They only filmed 3 episodes. They tried to put us against the football, Monday Night Football. They figured, hey, we want to get the audience. Our audience is older males. That's who usually watch the UFO shows. We want to entice them from watching football. So let's run a UFO show against the NFL Monday Night Football because we want that audience. Yeah, well, I guess thank you for having so much faith that these interesting MUFON cases could pull those people. But, yeah, it didn't happen. Surprise, surprise. So the ratings weren't that good, and it was, quite frankly, and I'm sure some of you are thinking this, that it was a dumb idea, really bad idea. Who are the geniuses who came up with this one? But, you know, Bob Weiss, the guy who produced it, he did a great job. It certainly wasn't his fault. And I think the show turned out good. And actually, and we'll talk to John. John says that they still run the program once in a while on, I believe it was the History Channel that was running that one. And so people will call them and say, hey, I just saw you on TV. And so luckily they're still running those episodes because those were really cool shows, I think. They were much better than some recent UFO shows, if you catch my drift. But, yeah, so that was who we've got coming on later on the show. And now I am excited. Oh, by the way, yeah, I didn't finish because the episode in Pennsylvania of the UFOs over Earth was called UFOs Over Pennsylvania. They covered a couple of cases that we'll talk about, including this mass sighting. And so John then figures, I'm going to write a book. And he does, and he calls it UFOs Over Pennsylvania, about some of the great MUFON cases he's worked on and some of what's gone on there. I also talked to him, because you may remember, and we did talk about this, he was on Anderson Cooper not too long ago to talk about UFOs. And Anderson Cooper didn't come off that great. And we're going to get John's side of this story here, and I think you're going to find it interesting. I certainly did. But yeah, so that's our guest. Cool, huh? I thought so, too. So let's get into the news. And I'm excited because I told you I was going to go find some news theme music, and I have done just that. Oh, yeah. Hold on, baby. UFOs in the news today. Well, actually, in the last couple of weeks, what's been going on with the UFOs in the news? I hope you like the new music. That comes from a really cool site. Incompetech is the name of the site. And this is a guy who does a lot of royalty-free music. He lets anybody, he's been doing this for years. He creates music. I've used actually some of my theme music in the past is been from him, or some of the YouTube videos I've done, and a lot of people actually have used his music because he offers it. He does this cool music, and he lets people use it for free. Isn't that cool of him? He is cool. That's fun, though, huh? Da, 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 UFO news. So this is our UFO news, and I'm just so excited about the music that I can't get into the news. We got to do this, though. In the lovely UK, speaking of the lovely UK, I did want to mention Tracy Austin, who we had last on the show, a lovely UK import. She now lives out here. I got to see her in Las Vegas, so that was a lot of fun because she lives out there, and she's just a very pleasant and wonderful UK lady, speaking of the UK. But they're seeing UFOs in the UK, apparently. Now, this first story is regarding what appears to be an identified flying object, but a lot of people were calling about some UFOs in the sky, and they were seeing some flares on September 23rd. They were seeing weird stuff in the sky, looked like maybe a meteor shower, but some debris or something. And that's what it turns out that they believe it was is some debris from a spacecraft or a satellite. They're really not sure that was coming through in the sky, and they got a cool little light show out there in the UK on the 23rd. So that was very pleasant for them. That would be neat to see. Actually, I have seen something like that. Maybe you have too. I'm out in the night. I'm a night guy. I love the night. I am not a vampire because I'm actually like a good guy. I guess there are some good vampires, but not really because they have to suck blood. I personally don't think that's cool. I'm a vegetarian on top of it all. So, but I'm like some sort of, maybe I am some sort of mutated monster paranormal being. That could be, I don't know. Because I really enjoy the night and I like being out there in the darkness at night. I love the calmness and I am a night being, a night vegetarian mammal type creature. And so I look up at the sky because I'm looking for UFOs, which I rarely see, but I do see satellites and shooting stars, and I have seen some incredible meteorites that break up in the sky and stuff. So these guys got a really cool show like that. However, on the same day, actually the day before, the Sun, the Irish Sun, reports that UFO floats over pregnant mum. Mum being the word for mom in England. Me mum. That's me mum. It's kind of how they say it, not really, but you can try to do your own accent there. Okay? I know I'm not good. Leave me alone. So this is an interesting picture because it shows a pregnant mum and she's standing there and above her is kind of a cute, they call it a, what do they call it? The guy from Toy Story, Captain Space dude, kind of looks like, oh man, what did they say? Sorry, I'm wrong now. Buzz Lightyear, there we go. It kind of looks like a glowing Buzz Lightyear floating above this lady. It's probably a moth, but that caught in a flash, or some sort of bug caught in a flash. But it looks pretty strange, and so people thought it was weird. The Sun decided that they would post it, and that's exciting. Yay. Thanks, UK. Other UK news. Oh, my gosh. I'm not a big fan of this story. I'm going to be honest with you. This is my good buddy Lee Spiegel we had on the show, and I'm always talking, oh, Lee, he's so great, he's so great. And then he does this crap story. No, I'm kidding. I mean, he felt it was good, and he thought it was just interesting that this Lord Martin Rees, an astronomer, calls. He didn't say only. See, and I don't necessarily agree with the title. It says, only kooks see UFOs. He didn't say that. The actual quote is that he doesn't give any of them credence. And he says something like, you know, kooks. Here we go. They wouldn't, if there were really UFOs coming from so far, ETs coming from so far, they wouldn't just meet a few well-known cranks. So, you know, he didn't call everybody who saw a UFO a kook, but he says, you know, some of these people that are reporting that they're meeting aliens are cranks, well-known cranks. I think so, too, that some of these guys are cranks. But I also think, and if I had one of these guys that I thought was a crank on my show, you wouldn't know, because I'm going to be nice to him, and I'm going to listen to him, and I'm not going to tell you I think they're a crank. And you may be thinking, who does he think is a crank? Come on, fess up, Rojas. I'm not going to tell you, because I don't want to talk bad about people. But, you know, there's a few. But there's also real-deal stuff out there. There are people having experiences. Certainly people believing they're having experiences. And especially people seeing UFOs. Come on, you can't call them all kooks. You know, we'll talk about this later, but this board of this panel of military people that were in Las Vegas recently certainly are not all kooks. I'm not a kook. I've seen a UFO. And I'll bet you if you pin this guy down, you know, have you ever seen anything you can't identify? Yeah. Well, then you're a kook. You know, that was kind of a blanket statement. So I don't know that he's saying everybody's a kook, but still, you know, an astronomer, old grouchy guy. Saying he doesn't believe in UFOs. Big whoop. How's that news? There's a bunch of these grouchy old astronomer guys. And, you know, I'm not too interested in what they have to say. However, there was another blogger on the Huffington Post. His name is Dan Mack. And he actually made a response to the story. And I loved his response. It's long. But, and I think Lee's going to do a follow-up because I told him about this stuff too. And we've talked about it on this show, is that there are astronomers who do believe in UFOs. Because this Lord Rees was saying, oh, if there was a real deal, you know, astronomers are always looking at the sky. They would be reporting UFOs. And funny enough, James McGaha, big debunker, Lee did quote him in the story also, who he doesn't believe in UFOs. He's a really bad debunker. You know, he comes up with really silly things to explain away some of these really interesting sightings. However, he did say that most astronomers aren't looking in the skies. He says most astronomers, he says he's a rare astronomer that actually is looking up in the sky with telescopes, but most astronomers are looking at data. They're looking at computer screens. They're looking at data. We've talked about the WOW signal, which of course was like ones and zeros on a form with some letters and stuff and some cryptic looking gobbledygook was circled and WOW was written next to it, and supposedly that was something interesting that the astronomers noted, and it's just like code and stuff, and what the heck is that? Nothing to do with stars. And he actually made the point that no, astronomers are actually not mostly looking at the stars. So isn't that interesting, I think? And but anyways, this Dan Mack did a story about all of the astronomers, many astronomers who have seen UFOs, and he included some tables and data, and I think he did a good job with that. So I tweeted that, and I'm telling you about it now. And it's on the Huffington Post Weird News page. Along with, speaking of mums, we've got bums. In Brazil, they had a pageant for the best booty, essentially. And so it's awfully distracting because you go to the Weird News and there's these pictures of these bikini babes in their booties, which they, of course, are some of the best booties in Brazil. I'm sure Brazil's got some of the best star out there, but I had to mention it because it was distracting me right now while I'm looking at Dan Mack's story. Other stories. Are we the extraterrestrials? Are you and I, in fact, the extraterrestrials? I think some of you have thought about that question, and I think some of you believe that perhaps your neighbor or someone you live with or someone, a family member, is an extraterrestrial. Well, there are scientists that may agree with you. In fact, they think that perhaps life was seeded here, and we've talked about this. This isn't really anything new. It's just some scientists have been talking about it lately, is that perhaps, you know, an asteroid or meteorite that was broken off from another planet with some microbes on it came and landed here on the Earth, and life was created. In fact, we spoke with a scientist a few weeks ago on this very show about those theories. Like, wouldn't it be interesting? Because he was saying there is no evidence that life was created on this planet. We've got no evidence that, you know, the initial microbes just like spontaneously appeared here. And his argument was we haven't seen it over and over again. If it's like a flower that blooms, boop, you know, and these things are created here, why wouldn't it happen all the time? Bunk, bunk, microbe, microbe, you know, all these different microbes. That's my microbes sound. And he's got a really good point there, I think. So maybe there are like these planets that are incubators for the life, and that they're seeded here by asteroids that come floating around. Kind of like, you know, the plants and stuff that travel across the ocean and seed life on other islands and stuff like that. So interesting thoughts. What's really kind of interesting is it shows the ignorance, I'm sorry, of these reporters. Because some of these reporters are like, oh, well, this is new. No, this isn't new. This transpermia and stuff like this has been talked about for many, many eons, well before I was born. And I'm a very young man. Actually, I'm getting pretty old. But one of the news sources, and I can't remember which, said, zany scientists are actually agreeing with or giving credence to scientists' zany ideas about extraterrestrials. And he was just talking about this transpermia, and it was like, dude, this isn't wacky. This is decades old. Come on. What were you doing in science class? Picking your nose? Here's another interesting story. Scientists discover Iron Man found by Nazis is of extraterrestrial origin. Dun, dun, dun. The title sounds more exciting than it is. Actually, I think it's an exciting situation. However, it's not what it appears to be. They did find, the Nazis, a old iron carving. And the iron carving turned out to be extraterrestrial. However, what it was is a meteorite. So some ancient peoples found a meteorite. And you've probably seen these things, and they're heavy, and they're really thick, and they carved this statue out of the meteorite. So pretty interesting. But that's why they're saying it's an extraterrestrial statue. It doesn't mean ETs carved the thing. It's just that they carved it out of an extraterrestrial rock. So speaking of these credible people, and speaking of Lee Spiegel, I got to hang with Lee Spiegel and some of my other buddies in Las Vegas last weekend. Who was there? Ben Hansen, Ben McGee. Let's see. Speaking of some of the TV shows that are not too good. Maureen and Jason. You guys remember them, huh? These guys are awesome. Tom and Antonio and all the Open Minds guys. Mike and John were all there. George Knapp, my good homeboy. Tracy Austin, like I was talking about. Alan Palmer, who runs this museum where they had this talk. And, of course, some of the speakers. John Alexander, Nick Pope, Colonel Halt. These are all my friends. So it was awesome to see these guys last weekend as there was this panel that was held by the National Atomic Testing Museum. And this panel was quite historic, in my own humble opinion. They had Bob Friend, who used to run Blue Book for a few years, Coleman, Robert Coleman, I believe his first name is, and he was a press person for Project Blue Book. Then, of course, you had Colonel Halt, who was the base commander at Rendlesham Air Force Base. However, he was deputy base commander when this incredible sighting happened in 1980, where he even saw this object that beamed a light. There was Nick Pope from the Ministry of Defense, and John Alexander, several of these people we've had on the show. And it was moderated by Alan Palmer, the head of the museum, the curator for the museum there. Cool guy. He was just awesome. The panel, there were no secrets revealed, really. I mean, this is stuff that you and I have heard. From the general public, I think they would be pretty interested. The two Blue Book people are skeptical. They say they genuinely did try to investigate UFOs and never came across a case that they thought proved of anything of extraterrestrial origin or that were that mysterious. But they both have interesting backstories. So Bob Friend, who ran Blue Book, had said he still, though, believes that this is a real phenomenon that needs to be investigated by science. And he reiterated that at this talk. Now, these guys are like in their 90s. Holy moly. That's why it's historic, because these guys haven't come out and talked like this in a long time. They've been in a couple television shows, but nothing like this. And they might not be around too much longer. But Friend went on to say, and he told us about how they really sent photos to labs. They sent film to labs. They sent materials they received to labs. They did their best to try to figure out what was going on and to prove that something mysterious was going on. And he just says they never came across anything. But he's all for, and he does believe there should be scientific investigation. So that's cool, right? Coleman is a little more skeptic. He's like, look, ETs are too far, this whole SETI thing. If they're going to, you know, there's no way they can get here from there type of jazz. However, giant however here, he had his own flippin' crazy UFO sighting where they saw this disc thing cruising across close to the deck, as they call it, you know, the pilots, close to the ground. They flew in their plane behind this thing and followed it. It was whipping up a trail from the ground. It was that close, zoomed and flew off at amazing speeds. To this day, he doesn't know what the heck that was that he saw. So how interesting is that? A Blue Book guy who's skeptical, doesn't think we've just, you know, shown anything, but he has this incredible sighting. And he recounted this sighting at this talk, and he said, I don't know what that was. So how cool is that? And then, of course, Colonel Halt came up. We've talked to him before, and he stated unequivocally, and this is a little bit new for him, actually. He said there he believes there definitely is some organization within the military that investigates and knows all about this UFO stuff. He's adamant there has to be who collected this information, who's been collecting all the information from all of these great sightings, such as, there's just like Gordon Cooper, who had the film of a UFO, the astronaut, and that film was taken away. Who took that away? All of these other instances where this film was taken away, who's taking this away? Where is it going? Somebody's got to be collecting it. Somebody's got to. And that's pretty bold for him to say that, because he's always kind of said that behind the scenes but never come out and said there has to be some sort of organization. The military must be still investigating UFOs. So that was kind of cool. Nick Pope came out, and this is something that he really hasn't talked about public too much, in that he says, we did. In the military, for the Ministry of Defense, when I investigated UFOs, we did try to make UFOs sound silly, and we also, even though not everybody, but he personally thought there was something to it, he said we also kept tabs on UFO organizations. We ordered their journals. He says he snuck into a conference, although he says mostly what they were looking for, at least the idea, was to see if we were seeing black projects. So were the UFO people, catching reports of the Aurora or these other possible black projects? Could they gather information about secret technologies that other governments are using by watching reports of UFO sightings? That's what they were doing, but they were spying on UFO groups. And then John Alexander, he didn't really say anything new. He just said the same, that UFOs are real. He looked into it, but he doesn't believe there's an organized group within the military. He essentially, even though he was in the military, says these guys are boneheads. They're goofballs. They're not organized enough that they're collecting the information, but it's mostly too much of a hot potato. They don't want nothing to do with it. Look, someone else's problem. This is too crazy. I don't want nothing to do with it. So, and Lee wrote a couple of stories regarding that. And then there was another UFO incident that's getting some news, where these Google pictures are coming up with what really looks like a reflection, some sort of reflection in a lot of these pictures. Because the image that is being captured in all of these pictures is exactly the same. And it looks like some kind of, possibly due to the way the camera is made, this kind of lens flare. Who knows? Who knows? That's just my suspicion. And then finally, my friend, is the Air Force's space plane. Remember we talked about this? It's kind of this, oh my gosh, my chihuahua is going crazy over here. Anyways, it's this small little kind of space shuttle type of thing that was up in the air for many, many days. 469 days it was in orbit. And it's supposed to be secret, but the Air Force is giving out like press pictures and stuff like this. Well, it's taking its third mission, and it's a secret mission. So they're saying, hey, we're flying our cool secret space plane, but we're not telling you nothing about it. I mean, why tell us that you're flying it, and why let us go take pictures and stuff? I don't get what's going on with this. Maybe it's just to get people excited about what they're doing. But at the same time, this thing is $8 billion of our tax dollars, and they're not telling us why they're flying it or what they're flying it for. The Chinese think that it could be some kind of weapon system. It could be. I think, and maybe it's just because I watched E.T. again since they released it on Blu-ray, could be full of Reese's Pieces. So they're, trying to attract aliens, E.T.s, because remember, E.T. liked Reese's Pieces. If you're too young to have seen E.T., you got to watch it, and then you'll know what I'm talking about. Because unfortunately, I'm getting that old where the movies that I watched when I was a kid, these younger dudes don't know what the heck I'm talking about, and that's kind of a bummer. But so who knows what's going on, but that's like $30 per American. So every American has put $30 into this, and for my $30... And how I got that number is subtracting $8 billion by 300 million Americans. I think I should get something for my $30. At least tell me what you're up to. Come on, dude. Just don't flaunt it in my face. I guess I'm getting these pretty pictures. Regardless of what the Air Force is up to, we've got a great interview with John Ventry. So let's hear what he's got to say. Okay, I'm very excited to have back on the show John Ventry. Welcome back, John.
Thanks for having me on, Alejandro.
Yeah, you've got a lot going on right now. So you have a couple conferences, one starting tomorrow, and then you have a new book.
Yeah, you know, I retired 3 months ago, and I can't believe how busy I am. I'm busier now than when I was working.
Yeah, I'll bet. I mean, this is a lot of stuff. And I heard you retired, and I figured, wow.
Yeah.
You're definitely keeping busy. I know, for instance, when my stepdad retired, he, like, couldn't figure out what to do. He started getting bored. And yeah. I always thought, you know, I'd be doing like you. I'd be keeping busy. There's all kinds of stuff to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's actually great because it's on my own schedule now. But, you know, a lot of people ask me, what are you doing? And I tell them, well, you know, I filmed 2 episodes with Discovery Canada. I was on Anderson Cooper's show. I just published a book. I've got another one that'll be out probably in January. I'm running 2 conferences, and I'm setting up a 3rd one for Erie, PA, for May. So I keep pretty busy.
Yeah, great. I used to go to Erie for work, actually. So let's start with that. Let's start with Anderson Cooper, because I had forgotten about that, but I've seen the video, you know, tweeted it and sent it around to people. How was that experience?
Well, you know, it was great. You know, this is going to be a 2-part answer, because when I filmed the show, and everything went great. I mean, you know, Joe Nickel was the skeptic there, and every time Anderson asked Joe a question, then he would say, John, what do you have to say about that? And I gave some really good answers, you know. So, you know, and we had good witnesses, the 2 girls from Kentucky and the one from the Bucks County, episode. And so when I left, man, I was on cloud 9 saying this was a good show. So then it airs a couple of days later, about 4 or 5 days later. And everybody in the Pittsburgh area is watching this thing, along with all of MUFON, because Dave sent out a email alerting everyone. And I'm sitting there and it's like, wait a minute, I said this, I said that. And they just edited about half of my answers out. They left in everything that Joe Nickel said, but then when I gave a good response, they cut it out. And I'll give you a couple of examples. At one point, Joe Nickel made a comment that the girls had seen Jupiter. And when he said that, the entire audience broke out laughing. They dubbed out the laughter, because I listened to it and you could just hear silence in the background, which means they just dubbed everything out. So they cut the laughter out. There was another point where I made a statement that these 3 women, you know, showed a lot of courage and integrity to come here and say what they saw, even though it's not, you know, accepted by the mainstream. And the entire audience applauded for me. So, you know, I thought, wow, that's great. That's going to be great on TV. They cut it out. And
you're kidding.
No, they cut it out, and there was a couple of other answers that I gave in response to what Joe said, and they cut it out. And, you know, it was just incredible, and, you know, I was upset. You know, I went from being, like, on Cloud 9 to Cloud 1 after I watched it. I mean, it was a good show, and I think, you know, my friends and family all watched it and said, well, I mean, that was great. You know, you were relaxed, and everything went well, and I said, no, it didn't, because half of what I said got cut out, and they absolutely, you know, slanted the show to the skeptic. And I could tell you the 3 women were really upset with, you know, Joe not believing anything they said. But that's, you know, that's a skeptic. And, you know, Joe and I got into it right at the end of the show, where I got a little heated with him because he was picking on the women and not believing them. And, you know, I'm pointing my finger at him, raising my voice, you know, telling him that, you know, skeptics, you don't look at any of the evidence. All you do is apply common sense. But, you know, sometimes things happen one time, you know, and you can't repeat it. It doesn't happen again. And that's what it is with these 3 witnesses. And but the funny thing was, over here in Pittsburgh, you know, this was a 40-minute show on Anderson Cooper. It rang longer than they thought. And right when they got to that last segment, the last 5 minutes of the show, when Joe Nickel and I are going at it, there's a special news bulletin alert here in Pittsburgh. So nobody that knew.
Oh, my gosh.
It was unbelievable. They caught this guy who held up a armored car. He killed his partner. I don't know if you remember that, Conias. He killed his partner and took off with the money. And they finally caught him in Florida or wherever he was, you know. So they cut out the whole end of the show for this special news bulletin. So nobody around here got to see the end when I got into it with Joe. But, you know, the funny thing, though, was there were 13 pages of comments on the Anderson Cooper website regarding the show and the
wow.
way that they viewed the witnesses being treated. And, you know, he also sprung a psychic medium on, to, you know, at the last minute. When I got there, he told me they were going to put this psychic medium up and could you support her? And I said, I'm not supporting her. You got three witnesses, myself and a skeptic. I said, that's all you need for your show. You got plenty here. We don't need to introduce a psychic medium. Now, I know they use them in police cases, and some of them probably have ability. But, you know, when you saw the show and what this woman said, that Anderson Cooper was from Lemuria, I mean, it just it became stupid at that point, you know. So that show went from being great to being, okay. But here's the thing that happened, though. You know, I called the producer twice and had some conversations with him, and I told him, take a look at your website. You got more hits on this show than any other show you've ever done. And, you know, a lot of it had to be the way you slighted the show, you know, in favor of the skeptic. And, you know, and nobody but you and I know what you cut out of the show, which turned it completely around. But, you know, that's what the media does. That was NBC. And, you know, so after the show airs, I say to myself, well, wait a minute, this aired on NBC here in Pittsburgh. Oh, I remember Trayvon Martin and Zimmerman, NBC. Remember how they edited the 911 call to turn it around into a racist situation when that wasn't what the call was, but they made it be that way. So I said, well, I guess that's what NBC does.
And you know what? I know there's no doubt because he's a producer. Anderson Cooper, I'm sure, had a lot to do with it also. Because, I mean, he's a skeptic, and he's a good guy. But, he's a skeptic. He's always kind of, the only couple of times he's talked about this issue, been very skeptic. And of course, during the show he was. And, big applause whenever he made a joke or he said something. And then at the end, you know, he says, I don't really believe this, kind of even setting up the audience. So then when he took the raise of hands, you know, not many of the audience raised their hands.
Yeah.
That was unfortunate. And I felt bad for you. You stood your ground. You did a great job. But you were kind of the only, like, investigator. A lot of these others, you know, had a lot of, except for your witness for the Bucks County sighting, were really kind of on the fringe, and he was dealing with many different issues and muddling it all together, and it wasn't really a fair shake.
Yeah, no, I agree. But you know what came out of it, though, and I don't know if it was the all of the comments that were on the website. That show aired in April. I think June 1st they left for the summer, and they came back September 1st with the show. The show was live now. So, you know, it went from being a taped show to a live show, and we were one of the last four or five segments that he had, you know. And, you know, so I don't know if that was because all of our complaints about the editing. And, you know, and I called the producer up and I said, hey, now put me back on live, you know, because he really liked what I did on the show. And he even said to me, you know, you did great. And you stood your ground and you fought for your side. And he said, this is great. So I said, good. Now put me back on live, you know, and bring Joe back. If you want just Joe and I, we'll have a debate on whether UFOs are real, you know. So,
yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Joe Nichol is frustrating. He's one of those debunkers. And what's really frustrating with him is even in his title, it's just a lie. It's not true, and he's supposed to be some investigator. He says he's the only full-time paranormal investigator.
Yeah.
Wrong. You know, there are plenty of people who have done that. I've done that for a period of time, paid full-time. You pretty much do that now. You're a full-time paranormal. And, you know, there are many, many others over the years, and he's always said the only full-time paranormal investigator.
Yeah. Well, you know, I found out something else about these guys. You know, they come on saying that they're skeptics, and everybody says, oh, okay, so that makes them, like, smart, and they look things up and all that. But here's something else, and I just came across this. I don't know where. These guys belong to a society called the Society of Skeptics, Agnostics, and Atheists. Okay? So that means they don't believe in God. They don't believe in anything. So I guarantee you the next time I'm on a show with a skeptic, if I can get back on Anderson and he brings Michael Shermer or Joe back, I'm going to ask him, do you belong to that society of the skeptics and all of that? And then I'm going to turn that around to him. Oh, so let me get this right. You're an atheist. You don't believe in God. Okay, so you don't believe in UFOs. You don't believe in God. You're an agnostic. You're a skeptic where you only believe what can be put out in front of your face. So I think if you give them their whole title, not just a skeptic, they're a skeptic, agnostic, and atheist. That's the society they belong to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's fair. It gives a full kind of, you know, it's like they were doing with you or with the UFO topic. It's like they're trying to air a lot of dirty laundry where they don't do that with the other side.
Yeah, I agree. So, you know, it was a good experience. You know, I tell you, that night, they put you up in a hotel the night before, and it's kind of a little dinky hotel down the street from Columbus Circle. But you know what I did? I booked my flight out, the following day, so I stayed an extra day in Manhattan, and I booked myself into the Waldorf Astoria using my Hilton hotel points.
Oh, wow.
And what a great experience that was.
Wow.
Because I'm a platinum something member with them because I have timeshares, and they have to upgrade you. So they upgraded me to the towers to a suite. What a room. Unbelievable.
Holy cow.
That was probably an $800-900 room that they put me in. So for me, that was a great, great couple of days. Now, I just wish they didn't do the editing because that kind of put a damper on it, you know?
Right. Yeah, those turkeys. That's too bad. Yeah, it's great to hear your side, too, because I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I don't know if many people did.
No, I mean, the only people that know... I tell you what, though, if you didn't know... I did write something in the journal. I wrote a rebuttal to my first... I wrote a story that actually got into the journal before the show actually aired. So then I wrote a rebuttal to it saying, well, everybody probably read my write-up last month. Well, let me tell you what happened. So I did put it in the journal. And it's in my book, too. In one of the sections that covers the media, I put that in there as to how the whole Anderson Cooper show went. So that's in my book.
Okay. Yeah, well, let's before we get to the book, because I think we'll probably spend a lot of time on that, let's also talk about these conferences that you have going on. Now, you've been running two conferences in the Pennsylvania area, essentially.
Yeah, and we're going to up that to three. You know, even though the economy is not as good and, you know, our pre-sales are down about 15-20% right now, I hope the crowd actually comes walking in and waited to the last minute because, you know, everything I've been involved in, you know, juvenile diabetes, Rotary, the golf outings, all the things I do for charity around here in Pittsburgh, attendance is down. People are just not spending money. And you saw it at the MUFON Symposium in Cincinnati also. So, you know, our pre-sales are down right now. But, you know, I still think we're going to have a really good conference. And, you know, when I say it's down, you know, instead of drawing 220, we might draw 190, you know, per day. So, you know, what are you going to do? But, yeah, we do two conferences, and we're actually planning to do an Erie, Pennsylvania conference, too, every May. So we'll do Erie in May, Philly in September, and Pittsburgh in October. And we have a great lineup. You know, this conference coming up tomorrow night, we start off Friday night. I'm the first speaker at 5:30. It's at the Bucks County Sheraton Hotel right across from the Oxford Valley Mall, which is the place where all of these UFO sightings in 2008 started in Pennsylvania. Right there at that mall is where the whole flap started with 200 sightings over 4 months.
Right.
So, you know, we obviously were trying to be smart about it, and so we do the conference in the location that got the press, and people, you know, will come out because they want to learn about it. But so it starts off with myself. Then we have a cocktail hour, you know, with hors d'oeuvres. And then after that is Frank Ficino. and he's going to speak about the 60th anniversary of the Flatwoods Monster case. So that's Friday night, and that's $33 to attend that. Saturday, we have five speakers. The last speaker today, we have the Switex and a few other speakers. But the last speaker today on Saturday is Travis Walton. So he's always, I think he's really in demand now. He's been going around all over the country speaking. So we have five speakers Saturday. It's $40 to get in. And then Saturday night is a dinner. You can sit at the table with one of our 12 speakers. So we have a dinner with the speakers, and Peter Robbins speaks at the dinner. That's $38 for the dinner. Then Sunday, you know, Sunday might be the best part of the whole lineup is we have four speakers and then the speaker panel. And our four speakers is Mark Passio. He's a local guy, kind of more of a paranormal investigator, but does UFOs also, but a real good guy. And then we follow that with Grant Cameron, Stephen Bassett, and Richard Dolan. And, you know, Bassett said to me that those three had never done a conference together before. So he says, make sure you tape it, sell the DVDs. And, you know, and it was his suggestion. He said, for the panel, you know, put the three of us together. And we'll have, you know, some of the other speakers on the panel also, not just the three of them. But I think the fact that you have those three speakers and then we get all the other speakers together for that question and answer session at the end Sunday is going to make for a real good conference. So that's the Philly conference. It's our fifth anniversary, and it's right where the 2008 UFO flap started in Pennsylvania.
Right, which kind of started this conference off with a bang. I mean, it was in the media big time, that sighting. And maybe you could give a short a kind of synopsis of what happened there. And then you had your conference, which was well attended, and it's been doing well ever since.
Yeah. You know, that conference, the first one we had in January, it was actually January of 2009, right after the TV shows aired on Discovery Channel, UFOs Over Pennsylvania. That first conference drew 600 people. It was probably the largest UFO conference in the country for a one-day conference. You know, I know that, you know, UFO Congress run 7 days, so they end up with more people. But for a one-day conference, we had 600 people come. Mm-hmm. And that started us off. I mean, that was, you know, it gave us a little bit of funding so we can hold these conferences each year. And, you know, every year we upgrade the conference, too. This is now the fifth conference. And, you know, this year we have the ballroom. So we've gotten each year a larger room because our attendance has actually gone up 15% every year. We draw about 30 more people every year, more than the last year. So, you know, we'll see how it looks right now. Right now it looks like we might be down 20 or 30 people, but it's still going to be a great conference with somewhere around 200 people per day.
Yeah, great. And, yeah.
Actually, Friday night's attendance for the cocktail hour with the two speakers, we've got about 15 more people pre-registered than we did last year when we had Lynn Katai as the cocktail hour speaker.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Yeah. So, again, maybe you could talk about just briefly on that sighting that started this whole thing off.
Yeah. Well, you know what? This 2008 case, you know, it really, when I go back through it, it starts around May, end of May, beginning of June, with some cases on the Pittsburgh side. And that never really came out, you know, even though I tried to tell the producers and, you know, and other people when they talk about maybe we'll do, we just did the Canadian Discovery Channel. But we never really talked about the Pittsburgh side of the state. It was always the Philly side. But what happened was there were some UFOs coming down from Lake Erie over East Lake, Ohio. And then from there, the strange thing is, I get this guy, Sam, over in East Lake, Ohio, calling me saying, I see these UFOs coming in off the lake. Then I get a guy in West Virginia over by Pittsburgh, Wheeling or Weirton, West Virginia. He tells me he sees these UFOs coming in from Ohio. So they're the same ones that came in over the lake. Then I get a guy in central Pennsylvania up by Penn State saying, I see UFOs coming across coming across the state. So, you know, you start putting it together. We got UFOs coming in over Lake Erie, Ohio, across this little peninsula of West Virginia before you get into Pittsburgh. We got cases in Pittsburgh, then we got cases across the state over by Penn State, and then we got the big flap over in Philadelphia where just, you know, it started at that mall, at the Oxford Valley Mall. It started with a news story that these kids leaving a swim meet saw this UFO over, it wasn't over the mall, it was over the Mexican restaurant, Don Pablo's, that had gone out of business, and they saw it over, you know, hovering over the building, and that hit the press, and we just got so many good cases. I mean, we got, I think when I look back at it, there were three police officers that filed cases, there were three military people that filed reports, and the one case we had from the police officer was great. And, you know, I spoke to the precinct and the media supervisor, and they just killed it. They wouldn't allow him to come forward. And he sent me a note saying, this is good for my career, and I can't come forward. You know, and I put that email in my book without his name, obviously. But I just put the text of the email as to what he said about how he couldn't come forward. And I didn't name the police department. You know, I didn't name the police department either. But you know, so that was a good case. But then you got to these two other cases that made it to the TV show. You had Denise and you had Cliff. And it's around the same time that the sightings occur in July. And you have, it's about the same time of night, too. It's at about 4 a.m. Both cases, the dog wakes the person up, the dog starts barking. And in Denise's case, she walks out to the back door, goes in her yard, and she sees this triangular UFO. It has three lights, you know, one on each corner. And there's about eight witnesses to this also, different people in the housing complex at different times, because Denise saw this three or four times. And there's a total of eight witnesses. And on one of the cases, she says it drops these metallic sprinkles down. She thinks they're probes into a tree, a privet tree, right there in her backyard. And she tries to take pictures. She don't get pictures. But, you know, Bob Gardner is my chief investigator. He takes samples from the tree and then other trees in the neighborhood. And we send it off to Professor Levengood for analysis. And, you know, it comes back that there's high levels of boron and magnesium on these leaves on her tree where she said something happened. So, you know, I asked Denise, do you carry boron and magnesium in your spice rack? She didn't know what I was talking about. But, you know, so she didn't sprinkle, you know, boron and magnesium on her leaves from the second floor window. You know, but, you know, then I came across something else in my other reading called Fawcett's Repetitions. And this was written, you know, 20 years ago. I think George Fawcett was North Carolina state director years ago. He identified 25 things that are similar in UFO sightings. What do you think number six is? Boron and magnesium.
Hmm.
So I guess that shows up as a trace element on UFO sightings. So you know, she had a good case. Bill Burns with UFO Hunters, you know, he got the police involved, the sketch artist. He interviewed all of the witnesses separately, and he said, you know, their sketches match up. You know, he had them interviewed separately, and he said, you know, this looks like a good case. So that was a real interesting case with Denise. And then, like I said, at the same time, you get Cliff's case. And Cliff is retired. He's living in Doylestown, so that's a little bit north of Denise, maybe about 15 miles or so. And same time, 4 in the morning, dog starts barking. He looks out the window. This happens twice now, a couple of weeks apart. He sees a slow-moving object coming, you know, towards his house. He thought it was a cloud. He didn't know if it was a hot air balloon. He said, what is this thing? And you know, he sees it when he gets close, and it looks like a six-sided craft very slowly moving in the air over his house. And the second time it happens, he gets his wife, and they go outside, and there's a heat lightning storm. And when the lightning flashes in the background, he can see what looks like six objects docked together, six triangular craft docked together, creating this six-sided object. So So that, you know, he thought that was amazing, and it moved very slowly. And then he said it just kind of went off to the northeast. So Bob Gardner goes and visits the calls the Philly Tower, and they invite him up there, clear him. And he goes up, and they said, yeah, we had a large object with no transponder, came on their radar, and it veered off to the northeast towards New York City. And that matched up with Cliff's sighting. But here's the interesting thing with this case now is, so then we file, after I'm told about everything that transpired, I file Freedom of Information Acts because I want to get the radar, right? So it comes back that there's no more radar. It's beyond the 45-day retention period, and there's no records to be checked. So I filed an appeal, and it came back with the same explanation. I called, the FAA, and they told me the same thing. There's nothing. So I contact Glenn Schultz, who's, with MUFON, and he gives me the protocol. And, they keep those radar discs. They don't get rid of them. They're there right there in the office. They just filed in a different cabinet, So the FAA is giving you these FOIA answers saying that there's no records to be checked, and that's not true. And I contact this person at the Philly Tower, and I told them, hey, this is the procedure. You've got this radar, and I want a copy of it. Well, this person responds back to me, I run an efficient office. Yes, I do have the radar. I will send it to you. So now this is in direct conflict with the Freedom of Information Act that says they don't have it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's significant. So this person sends me two discs. Of course, I can't read them because you have to have the airport's system to be able to Raptor system, it's called, to read the disc. So I send them off to Glenn Schultz. He reads them. He pulls down six screens of paints of objects that didn't have transponders on it, right? So I get back to the person and tell her that the discs were corrupted and overlaid with other other data, because that's what Glenn had told me. And she replies back that remember that the discs were not overlaid. I didn't do that, something to that extent. But I put that in my book also. All of these emails, I took the names out, and I just put the conversation in my book. But it paints a very clear picture of the FAA telling you there's no records to be checked, and this person giving me all the records to be checked.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's significant. And we didn't get to do that on the Discovery Channel show, because that all transpired after the show was filmed, which happened, we filmed that as this case was going on in July and August, and the show aired in November. But I finally got to the truth about January of the following year. So, if we can ever get to redo that show with Discovery Channel or History Channel, we'll bring the facts out on the radar.
Right. And I mean, that was, and that show, especially nowadays, and I don't know if some people listening are probably kind of new, and they don't know that MUFON had a show with Discovery Channel. There are only three episodes. One of them is this one that you're talking about, is UFOs Over America, was a whole show. And that was a really good show, I thought. I mean, they showed all of your research and what you guys did. They included the part about the tower and everything. And, I keep thinking back to how good that show was. Especially in light of these new shows, which are not close to as good.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, Alejandro. If you look at the UFOs Over Earth three episodes on Discovery Channel, which play all the time on Investigative Discovery, I get, every time it airs, somebody sends me an email or calls me and says, you're on again.
Cool.
which is cool. I got people from my high school graduating class say, is that you? Emails. I say, yeah, that's me. But, you compare it to Chasing UFOs, and then you compare it to that show we did 4 years ago. I mean, that show was good.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's funny? You get this criticism all the time, no matter what you do. People criticize the Anderson Cooper show. People criticize because I got hot with Joe Nichols at the end. But yet the three witnesses were happy I did that,
Right.
And the producer was happy also. But, but I remember 4 years ago people were criticizing, well, why did you air the North Carolina case with Richard Lang if the guy failed the polygraph? Well, that was part of the investigation. He failed the polygraph, but he
right.
still says that he saw what he saw, and you know, that he claims he had a close encounter of the third kind, you know. So, you know, but, you know, this seems to always be criticism. But if you look at that Chasing UFO show right now, my God. I mean, you know, they're handling evidence without gloves. They're going into radioactive areas. You know, they're rappelling down walls. And I mean, it's like, it's nothing but showbiz. You know, it's
Yeah, it's really sad. And, you know, I talked with Ben McGee. In fact, I saw him this last weekend, the science guy on that show.
Yeah.
And I mean, he kind of had an Alan Hynek moment. He genuinely wanted to do some investigation, on the show that you were talking about, the UFOs over Pennsylvania episode of the UFOs over Earth, and
yeah.
They really didn't let him. It was kind of like Hynek, where it's like, okay, get in there, and we're not going to tell you anything prior. We're not going to really let you analyze anything, but we're going to ask you to come up with a conclusion without being able to do any research.
Yeah.
So it's really unfortunate because he thought it was going to be more like that. So did James Fox, and it turned out to be just nothing like that.
But you know what I read, though? You know, it took Fox had a lot of guts to come forward and say this show wasn't what he expected, and they hijacked it from him. But there was a statement I read. I think it was an Entertainment magazine or just in the newspaper that was the most highly rated show on Nat Geo. They had more people watching UFOs over Earth, Chasing UFOs, than any of their other shows. So you know they're going to renew it. It was their highest rated show.
Well, that's in question because Lee Spiegel did a story too, and they told him that. However, it sounds like it's not going to be renewed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised either, but it puts into question these claims that they made that it was doing so well.
Yeah, well, you know, the female on there, Ryder, if you watched any of that Destination Truth on the Sci-Fi channel, she was in that, and it was that same MO of...
Yeah, same formula.
Yeah, repelling and that action type stuff. So, you know, I spoke with James Fox, and I told him, and he's going to be at our Philadelphia conference next year. So
he's going to be
one of our speakers. He wants to come to Philly and talk to the crowd. So that's going to be cool.
Yeah.
But that's the story on those shows.
Yeah. And now these cases that you just talked about are two of the cases that are in your new book, right?
Yeah, they're in there.
So what is the name of the book? You know, how many? What is the gist of it?
Okay, well, the book is, now we just talked about the show, which was UFOs Over Earth, right?
Uh-huh.
So I named my book UFOs Over Pennsylvania.
Ah, there you go.
And in the opening, I say it's, you know, it's a takeoff from the TV show in 2008. And we have a great cover that shows the state of Pennsylvania. I got these little dots, you know, like you would put a pin everywhere you had a UFO case. You know, most of them in that Bucks County area and the Pittsburgh area. And I got a UFO, and then I got these three bright lights on the other corner. So it's a really nice cover. And the book, Alejandro, is 580 pages. I could have wrote 1,000 pages on you know, and I was actually, you know, when I was talking to the publisher, he says, you got to split this up into two books. I said, well, you know, I'm going to put it all into one book, and I'm just going to make it really good for the people here in Pennsylvania. But it has 90 pictures in it. It has 580 pages. There are 15 different authors to the book. I wrote, there's 35 chapters. I wrote 21 chapters. The other 14 chapters are written by 14 different authors, which made it very easy for me. You know,
right.
we have Bill Burns wrote a chapter on the Bucks County case because he was involved in that with UFO hunters. Tom Carey wrote a chapter on the Carbondale case that he investigated with Rick Fisher. And then I have Reverend Swoop out of Erie. And we didn't get to talk about the Erie conference or the Pittsburgh conference coming up, but Reverend Swoop and Fred Saluga wrote a chapter on Prescott Island. One of my investigators wrote a chapter on Harrisburg cases. And then there's some personal accounts in there, too, from Chris Augustine and Alyssa Milano. She was the one in the show with us in that case, the Asian woman, if you remember her, Alyssa Simon is her name, Alyssa Simon. She wrote a chapter, so it's really cool. And you know, and then you know, I even have a chapter on police cases. So what I did was I investigated and pulled out all of the UFO sightings over the years. And I think I go back to like 1955 in Pennsylvania. And I have one chapter that has about 30 accounts by police officers. And I named their names because they were in newspaper articles and their names were named. And so you know, you talk about, well, are there good police cases and sightings? Yeah, there's a whole chapter on these police sightings throughout the state over about a 50-60 year period. So and then what I did was the last third of the book I call related material, and I have chapters that I think people would want to read. Scotty Roberts wrote a chapter on the Nephilim. Paul Stonehill wrote a chapter on Russian USOs. Carl Fine wrote a chapter on American USOs. Philip Mantle wrote a chapter on the real alien autopsy story, which is a really good chapter. And he wrote another chapter on a case in England. And so that's all the different type of authors that I have in the book writing different chapters. And I'm so proud of this book. I tell you, Alejandro, I wrote the two 2012 books, which were, you know, mostly science fiction books, although I did a lot of research on the 2012 prophecies, the Mayans, Hopi, Edgar Cayce, all of these different cultures and prognosticators. But, you know, I did those two books, and now I got to my third book, and I got to tell you, this is a quality book. The cover, you know, the way it was put together, the pictures, I'm very proud of this book. Even in the end of the book, we have position statements by people in the field. I was reading a UFO book written, it had to be 50 years ago, and I kept seeing in there position statement. I said, man, I haven't seen that in years, position statement. So I, all of a sudden, I was done with my book, and I said, I'm adding another chapter right before I published it. And I emailed everybody that's ever spoken at my conferences, probably sent 40 emails out, and about 30 returned it with their position statement on what they believe or know. And it's funny, one of them, you know, I asked them to tell me what you believe, and one of them actually came back, Salas, with the Malmstrom case, and he said, John, this isn't what I believe, this is what I know, because I was there.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me his position statement, but you know, that chapter in the back has 30 different position statements. Stanton Friedman, Lynn Katai, Bill Burns, you know, all the usual suspects that speak at the conferences. But you know what I was thinking, and I think this is going to be pretty cool when we do these two conferences now over the next 2 weeks, is you can buy this book. It's only $20 for 580 pages. And, you know, I'll obviously autograph it, but at any given conference, there's going to be four or five people who wrote something in that book. So you can get Bill Burns, Tom Carey, you can get, you know, this weekend, Grant Cameron, Stephen Bassett all gave me position statements, and you can get their signature. You can get them to autograph their position statement or the chapter that they wrote. And I think that's going to be cool. I'm going to tell people, you bring the book back every year to the two conferences, or three conferences once we start Erie next year, and just keep getting signatures. Over a 4 or 5 year period, you're going to get 30 signatures in this book, and that kind of makes it a collector's item.
Yeah, that is really cool. And, you know, not only that, I'm sure, you know, other conferences you go to, since you have so many people in there, that most likely there'll be a speaker from at that conference that's in your book.
Yeah, you know, you know what? You just gave me a great thought. I have one copy, the first edition, that I have downstairs, and I signed it and wrote first edition. What I'm going to do now, I have to bring that with me now to all these conferences. I got to get those people to autograph that. Just like I'm asking everybody else, I need to do that. You just gave me a great idea. So I have to do that now.
Yeah, that's really cool. Now, with this book, when you were putting it together, there must have been some stuff that was kind of news to you, or something that you found particularly shocking or interesting that you didn't know before.
Well, you know, right in the prelude, right in the beginning, I came across something called What President Kennedy Would Have Said. And it's a letter written, this is by Professor Lawrence Merrick. And he has a letter there of what the president would have said regarding disclosure. But what he does talk about was two documents, which I was able to find and put in the book from Kennedy that were written a week prior to his assassination. And, you know, it regards him talking about coming forward with the truth and stuff like that. So there were two very, very interesting documents 7 days prior to his assassination. So, you know, there are people that, you know, surmise, you know, why was Kennedy killed? And, you know, but I'm coming across more now that there might have been a UFO angle to this, that he was going to come forward, you know, with the truth as far as what was going on. And the same thing with Robert Kennedy. So, you know, I found that to be very interesting. But, you know, it surprised me with all of the police cases, because I didn't know I was just going to come across, you know, and I was actually writing the chapters, you know, like the different chapters, UFOs over Bradford, over Reading, over Somerset, over Bloomsburg. And I kept coming across an article that talked about a police were called to the scene and saw the UFO. I said, you know what, I got to put a chapter in there on police sightings, pull all of those together and make a separate chapter out of it. You know, there is also another chapter in there which I called Mummification. And this is an interesting story. I guess it was about, you know, I have to look at my book, see when it was. It was maybe 4 or 5 years ago that I had this person contact me. And she started, I verified her background. She was, you know, NSA. And, you know, and she would tell me stuff about UFOs, about, you know, them being real. But she got often into almost like it's interdimensional and things like that. But then I didn't hear from her for a while, and she contacts me and says, tell me about the Todd Sees case in Pennsylvania. So, I told her the Todd Sees story, and she says, well, this is important to me because my grandfather used to tell me a story that he was abducted by a UFO. He was awoken. He was in like the top of a tree, and there was like a calf, cattle in the tree with him, you know. And she said, I've researched it and come up with 6 cases around the country where people were killed and mummified and dropped into a tree. And that's why she was looking at the Todd Sees case, because Todd left his house to go ride his ATV. And he's found like a mile from his ATV. He's in his underwear. His boots are 2 miles away in the top of a tree. And, you know, they say he was drained of blood. There was no fluids in his body. And that's why she was asking about it. But she goes on to tell me a whole bunch of other stuff. And I copied everything she said. You know, I changed her name. And I put all of our conversations in the book. Now, I lost track of her, I think it was 2 years ago. Right about now, it's about 2 years ago, I lost track of her. And she said she had to leave the country. She contacted me from Europe twice and told me where she was. She even sent me pictures of where she was. And that's it. Gone. Hmm. You know, she was kind of like on the run. She was one of these people. And I asked somebody really, you would know who the person is, obviously, do you know this person? And he confirmed, oh, yeah, she was like deep, deep, you know, into undercover type stuff. And he knew who she was. And she's gone 2 years now. I've emailed her, tried her phone number. I can't seem to track her down. So that chapter's in there. It's called Mummification. And I think that's a real interesting chapter in there.
Yeah, how strange. And you were able to confirm she actually did work for the NSA.
Yeah, I confirmed her background. And this other person, well, that person told me she was deep into stuff, that he knew who she was. Hmm. And that's what she had told me, you know. So, you know, it's a really interesting chapter. And you know what? Probably the thing I learned the most from this book was I did a chapter on Nazi UFOs. And, you know, that was something that we didn't really know a lot about. And I think the first time I heard anything about Nazi UFOs was when James Carrion brought that up at the what was that, the 2009 symposium, when he talked about Roswell and possibly, you know, being Nazi technology, and it wasn't extraterrestrial, but it was actually somebody flying that, you know, either it was American or Russian technology. I had never heard of that before, but, you know, so I did some research into the Nazi UFO program and Kamla, and what interesting information I came up with, you know, Project High Jump and a few others that really interesting. And Hitler's involvement in the occult and the Vril Society, and a book written in 1871 called the Vrilya, and his right. belief in this you know, underground society in Hollow Earth. And if anything, that was the chapter where I learned the most of that I wasn't aware of. And you know, it's funny, Discovery Canada came out here maybe 3 weeks ago to film the Kecksburg UFO case with Stan Gordon and myself and the local witnesses. And they said to me, I want you to cover the Nazi angle on Kecksburg because it looked just like the Bell program. So I had already done the research for my book on the Nazi UFO program and the Bell and all of that. So I said, yeah, that's cool. I'll do that because I just learned about it. And, you know, so that was my part in the TV show, was talking about the Nazi program, which I think would make a great movie if somebody, you know, like Valkyrie with Tom Cruise, you know, and let's do it from a UFO angle of Kamla and these secret programs and what they were working on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be interesting. But I wanted to know also about some of the cop cases. Were you able to speak to some police other than the one that you said wanted to stay anonymous earlier?
Yeah, well, yeah, that one I had direct contact. Most of these other cases, though, were old. They were really from newspaper articles and that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know who helped me tremendously with this book was John Schuessler. John sent me packet after packet of old stories from Pennsylvania, and you know, I would go through them and break them down by city and kind of categorize them, you know, individual chapter, and that's where I came across the police cases. But you know, a lot of these cases were 50, 40 years old. You know, I did try looking up some of them and calling and the phone, but those people weren't around anymore. And you know, it was interesting. Even some of the people from the 2008 case, when I tried to track them down, they were gone. Huh. I sent release letters to their house. They came back that they were no forwarding address. I tried their phone numbers from my MUFON files when I was talking to them on the investigations. They were gone. You know, so obviously in the book I changed their names because I don't know where they went. They could be in Florida. But, you know, so it was in a lot of instances, it was hard to track these people down. You know, so you just – and I say that in the opening too. You know, I changed a lot of names for obvious reasons. You know, I couldn't find them, so I didn't have the permission. So I just used a different name and described what happened.
So do you feel that Pennsylvania is a hot spot?
Well, yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, one of the things I mentioned in the book was in 2009, Popular Mechanics of all magazines did a story. And it said that Westmoreland County, where I live and Stan Gordon lives, has had the most UFO cases of any county in the United States that doesn't have a major city in that county, like L.A. County, let's say. But Westmoreland County has had the most UFO cases over the last 50 years of any county. And,
that's really strange. I wonder where they got this, maybe from Newport, because I certainly wouldn't trust anything they have to say about UFOs. They're terrible on this subject.
Yeah. Are you talking about Popular Mechanics?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, actually some of my guys emailed them and were asking, you know, what your source was and all of that. But we do get a lot of cases here in Westmoreland County.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think it probably stemmed from Stan Gordon, who had such a network here with the police and investigators and scientists and newspapers. I mean, in this area, he did what a state director should do. And so I think any case that came up, you know, it got reported and got categorized. But the thing I add to that story is that Bucks County, over the last 4 years since the 2008 flap, has had the most cases of any county in the United States. Hmm. I mean, you can throw Stevensville in there. You know, I've got at least 600 cases out of Bucks County over the last 4 years. You know, so the Bucks County and Westmoreland County are the two hot spots in the country. Pennsylvania usually comes in third or fourth, you know, in sightings. You know, it's usually California, Texas, and then I you know, it's between Florida and Pennsylvania as far as who ends up number three and number four. But, you know, also you can look at that, and it's the states with the most population, you know, usually get the most sightings. You know, although states like, and it's real odd, New York, you don't see a whole lot of cases. You know, Massachusetts, a lot of states that have a lot of population, you're not getting a lot of cases either.
Right. And do you see then in Bucks County that the events are similar? Is it a similar type of phenomena being experienced there?
Well, you know, those cases there were two types in Bucks County. There was this triangular craft that people were seeing when they saw it low flying, you know, like cloud level, below cloud level. Mm-hmm. And then there was a kind of a star-like fast-moving object that they would see, you know, when it was high at like 10,000 feet, let's say. And, you know, when I saw something like that right in the middle of that flap on June 28th, and it just stunned me. But, you know, I did what we're supposed to do. I went to the tracking sites, and it was actually an asteroid that passed through at that, I think it was 10:15 p.m., and the moonlight reflected off of it. So I saw this bright object just shoot by. There was no contrail, no flash to it or anything, but it was lit up, and it just moved across the sky, and it turned out to be an asteroid.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what the interesting thing, too, is, you know, I learned about the TR-3B, which, you know, people claim is a, you know, Air Force government anti-gravity craft. And, you know, when you read about it, it's a triangular craft with three lights on it. And it actually matched up to what Denise and, you know, half those cases were reporting. So you got to wonder now, was it a government project that these people saw in Bucks County?
Yeah, when you mentioned John Schuessler, when he was part of the Bigelow Group NIDS, they did an investigation where they tried to figure that out. But of course, there's no official records. They couldn't find for sure that the government ever worked on a TR-3B or something like that. But of course, if they have, then that would, you know, say a lot, especially if they did it towards the 90s when all the triangular stuff started. So it's certainly an interesting question.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. So, but, you know, it makes me think, because you always, you know, none of us have the answer, and we go back and forth, you know, mm-hmm. and you say, is it psychological? Is it a misidentification? Is it a government craft? And, you know, even though you try to figure that out, what I always do to ground myself is I go back and say, okay, that doesn't explain the older cases, you know? Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, tomorrow night, my presentation to start off the conference is called UFOs in Art and History. And I go into the Renaissance paintings, the cave drawings, the petroglyphs, all of that type of stuff. And, you know, when you look at the history of this, and actually, if you lay it out and you look at the whole timeline, you know that this thing is real. And but, you know, the average person hasn't done that, you know. Right. So they don't understand the history, you know, when the CIA got involved and the Brookings Institute and that type of stuff.
So, you know, getting to that, what are your feelings about the nature of the phenomena?
Well, my position statement's in my book on page 5. I did write a position statement. You know, my beliefs have changed over the years. And, you know, I used to think it was just interplanetary, that the moon is a way station. They're probably on the dark side. And you know, they have a base there, whether it's in one of the craters, and they come in and out. And, you know, just like any settler, you know, when the people came over from Europe, there was a place that they, you know, kind of restocked their supply, stuff like that. And I figured it was always, you know, interplanetary. They came here from some distant planetary system. It probably takes 50, 60 years to get here. Mm-hmm. You know, but I tell you now, because in this area of Westmoreland County, it not only has the most UFO cases, it has the most Bigfoot cases. It has like the most paranormal groups and ghost hunters. I went to a website, paranormalsocieties.com. There were 260 paranormal groups in Pennsylvania with over 1,500 members. So, you know, when you start to go to some of their conferences and you talk to some of their people, and some of them join MUFON and they tell you their beliefs, at this point in my life, I'm thinking that this UFO phenomenon is interdimensional. Mm-hmm. And because I try to, in my mind, I'm trying to logically reason through everything. I've had some paranormal experiences in my life that would be more on the ghost side, let's say. So I have to try to explain, where does that come from? Where do UFOs come from? Where do these legends come from? You know, and more people have had ghostly encounters, let's say, than UFOs. So, you know, I'm kind of leaning now that there's another dimension, and maybe it's the same dimension when you pass away that your spirit goes to. And so I kind of think that this is all interdimensional. But, you know, every time I think that, you know, you come across something else. And, you know, I'll be talking to somebody who tells me, well, you know, UFOs are demonic. And, you know, it's the devil was cast out and Lucifer went to his own dimension or world. And like Hitler, he's developed these crafts and stuff and they're able to come through to our side. And that's why you have abduction. So, I mean, you listen to this and you say, well, that may, you know, sounds pretty good. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. Nobody knows, you know. And until somebody, you know, until we get government official, you know, disclosure on it and tells us exactly what it is, you know, we're just guessing. It's all, you know, third hand and, you know, you don't really know. But, you know, my guess is I think it's interdimensional.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. And it's interesting to hear you say, you know, how you kind of go back and forth, especially because you have an open mind about it, just trying to look at the facts. But with the other position statements, was everybody pretty much saying the same thing, or were you surprised by the diversity?
Well, no, I think that most of them talk as a fact of being interplanetary and government cover-up. You know, I think that that's, if, you know, if I had a category, it's 3 out of 4 probably towed the party line of interplanetary extraterrestrials that came here, the government knows, and the government's not telling us, and that one day we will get the truth, hopefully. You know, you know, but there's a lot of opinions in there, some real pointed opinions also. But, you know, again, it's a cool chapter to read.
Yeah, it would be really interesting. I'm looking forward to that. And where can people find the book? I know I found it on the Barnes & Noble. You can download it for your Nook, it looks like.
Yeah, it's on Nook. It's on Kindle. You know, obviously those are the most cost-effective ways to do it. I think it's only $4.95 on those avenues. And, you know, the hardcover copy, if you want to get my signature on it, it's $20 and it's, you know, $5 for shipping and handling. And that's exactly what it costs me for the media mail, because it's a heavy book. It's like 2 pounds. and the mailer that you put it in, the padded envelope, it cost me $5. So, you know, I'm not making anything on that. So if you see me in person, it's $20 at the conference. If I have to mail it to you, it's $25.
Mm-hmm. And where do they go to get that? Can they go to the Pennsylvania MUFON site?
You know, you could probably find me on that site, but I have my own website. It's just johnventry.com. And, you know, what's left of the 2012 books is on that website, a couple of DVDs also. But it's my name, johnventry.com. And, you know, you'll find this book. And you'll also see my next book, because I got like a little kid in a candy store when the publisher, we already created my cover for the next book. And that's on the website, too. So if you go to johnventry.com, you'll see this and you'll see my new book, even though it's not there to buy yet. But this one is.
And just so people know, Ventry spelt V-E-N-T-R-E, John spelt J-O-H-N, so J-O-H-N-V-E-N-T-R-E. And I guess finally, what is your next book about?
Well, it's about the asteroid Apophis. I'm going back to sci-fi, where this, of the 4 books I'm writing or have written, this is, you know, the UFOs over Pennsylvania would be nonfiction because it's factual, and the other 3 books are sci-fi. I am just a real creative person. I get a lot of ideas. I mean, I sit and watch shows and say, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you say that? I critique shows and movies as I watch them, but then I get these epiphanies and say, man, I'm going to write something, you know, and put it in my sci-fi book, but I can do that in a sci-fi book. So it's about an actual asteroid by the name of Apophis. And this asteroid's a half mile wide. Every 7 years, it gets closer and closer to Earth. And this is true. I'm not making this up. So it's based on an actual event. In 2029, this asteroid is going to pass us and dip below our satellite. So it's going to be less than 20, and this is the truth, it's going to be less than 25,000 miles. It's going to be so close to Earth, but it's a half mile wide. And I learned a lot about asteroids from my research. You have to have at least a mile wide asteroid to cause a climate change, let's say. But, a half mile wide asteroid would take out the eastern seaboard of the United States. The trajectory on it is actually into Nigeria. So if it were to hit, it would take out the entire country of Nigeria. If you're anywhere within 1,000 miles of it, you're in trouble. But it's not a planet changer. So if it hit Africa, you wouldn't feel it over here, but you have to have at least a mile wide asteroid. So it's based on that and what happens, and it's a storyline. And the cool thing is I try to predict what the world will be like in 2029, with technology and voice activated stuff and where we'll be, that. And the same thing I did in the first 2012 book that I published in 2007. It was a sci-fi story of what happens with the Mayan calendar and the catastrophe. And the crazy thing is, I put that in that new book, is there was, I think, 7 things I wrote in that book 5 years before they happened, and they actually happened. And I'll give you a good example. On page 2 of the 2012 A Prophecy book, on page 2, the main character is sitting there watching television and watching his favorite show called Switched at Birth. That show just came on ABC September of 2011, and it's in my book. You can look at the copyright. It's in January of 2007.
And you just came out of this, you just made this up, that there would be a television show called Switch at Birth, and you didn't know this was coming up.
No, how would I know? It was 5 years before
that.
Oh,
wow.
It's like, it's crazy, Alejandro.
Yeah.
I'm at work, and, a lot of the people that work for me over at UPS, they read my book, and they would come up to me and say, "Hey, John, do you realize that just happened? The Switched at Birth show. There's something in my book about the Supreme Court ruling that, the Second Amendment, your right to guns, is a right and it's not a privilege by the government. And the Supreme Court rules that, 5-4, they ruled a couple of years ago. I have something in my book where we find this cylinder, this pod, and it's Norwegian fishermen that finds it, and it almost matches up to what just happened with that disc that's on the bottom of the Baltic Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very similar description to it. So, then I have another section in there where the character and his buddies in a bar, and they're talking about this movie and what a cool movie it was, getting all those old time action stars together: Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Van Damme, Bruce Willis. And that movie comes out, The Expendables 1 and 2. So, I don't know. There are things in the book that just happened. But that thing with the TV show, like now, can I pick the name of a TV show that's going to be on in 2029? I mean, that's what I did. It's in the book, and
right.
I can prove it. Yeah, and
that's
I can prove
it. That's great. That's so funny. That's really cool. That's interesting.
Yeah, so I mean that I think that's so cool that I actually picked the name of a TV show 5 years before it appeared.
Well, it's looking pretty good that we're going to make it to 2013. So maybe your new book will set the new date that everybody will say the world's going to end. 2029 will be the new, everybody will talk about that instead of 2012 now.
Yeah, well, we had Y2K and then 2012, but, I wouldn't go saying that we're going to make it to 2013.
We're going to make it.
I tell you what,
that's
though.
That's my prediction.
Yeah, well, I hope so. As a matter of fact, I was supposed to speak down in Mexico at the Chichen Itza at the Temple of Kokokan December 21st. And that kind of, some things happened there. I'm not going down there. I actually feel a lot better than I'm not going down there.
Yeah.
I don't want to be stranded in Mexico.
Yeah.
Down, But it's all fun. I'm retired now and I can spend more time on this. And I like doing the sci-fi stuff also because I can use my imagination.
Right. All right. Well, great. We're out of time. Thank you so much for coming back. This was a lot of fun. The book sounds really interesting. I think people are going to really, really love that.
Thanks for having me on, Alejandro.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. 2013, right around the corner. Are we going to make it? Are we not? You be the judge. We're going to make it. Quit being goofy, you bunch of knuckleheads. So, yeah, if we don't, I'm going to be mad because I want to see another Christmas. So open some Christmas presents. If I don't get my Christmas presents, I'm going to be really upset. So I am so happy that you were able to join me once again for another wonderful episode of UFO Think Tank Radio. Don't forget to visit UFODailyNews.com for the UFO news feed, which you can find the links to the stories that we talked about at the beginning of the show. Also, keep an eye out. I'm going to write a little opinion thing about the Las Vegas thing for the Huffington Post. And then, of course, go to JohnVentry.com to see his books, or to the Pennsylvania MUFON site to read more about those conferences. If you're out there by Pittsburgh and you want to check out their conference coming up here in a couple weeks, you can do that. That'll be a lot of fun. It may be, if John is right, the last conference you ever see. Thank you so much. You guys have a wonderful week. Adios, muchachos.